Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tomorrow on the program, a pastor's roundtable, cohabitation. Just a fancy word for living together in sin. That's what they used to call it. Pastor Stephen Parks of University Hills Lutheran Church in Denver will be our guest. We just don't call it that anymore. Even in the church, living together in sin. Even the church has adopted the euphemism for sex outside of marriage, living together outside the benefit of marriage. Also on our roundtable, Pastor Kirk Clayton of Zion Lutheran Church in Muscoda, Illinois, and Pastor Tim Ostermeyer of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Ann, Missouri. For the next few minutes of the program, we're going to be talking about a deadly stampede at a Hindu temple in India that's been in the news. Dr. Victor Raj will join us here in just a moment. We'll try to put it in perspective with regard to Hinduism as well. Before we talk with Dr. Raj, let's get the story from CBS.
In India, the death toll stands at more than 145 after a stampede of Hindu worshippers. Police say panic led to chaos, and tonight, hospitals are warning the death count is likely to rise. Richard Roth has the latest.
Many were children who had no chance at all, crushed or suffocated in the stampede of pilgrims who were frightened by rumors of a landslide on the path to their Hindu shrine. The crowd of 20,000 or more was too big for a narrow stone pathway leading up to the temple in the foothills of the Himalayas. When the crowd surged in panic, guardrails gave way, and some victims fell to their death. I found all my relatives, this woman said, and all are dead. This was a festival celebrating a Hindu goddess of motherhood. Authorities knew huge crowds would be drawn to the small shrine with no facilities to handle them. The government now says there will be compensation to the families of all the victims and an investigation. Richard Roth, CBS News, London.
Dr. Victor Raj joins us. He's a regular guest, mission professor of New Testament and assistant director of the Institute for Mission Studies at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He formerly served as president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Nagarkoil, India, and he's author of the book, The Hindu Connection, Roots of the New Age. Dr. Raj, welcome back.
Welcome. Thank you, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How would Hinduism explain this tragedy that we heard about, this stampede and so many dead in India?
Well, it's a multi-pronged question. One way is to look at it as a pilgrimage, which it is, and then you're meeting your end, meeting your God, and so goes your end. In that sense, it is a happy ending. On the other hand, it is a tragedy in the sense that a community is now grieving, irrespective of religion, a loss of life. Yet, on the third hand, it is a context in which pluralism reigns, as all over India, particularly in this place, where the Holy Land is holy not only for Hindus, but also for Muslims, because there's a strong contingent of Islamic settlement in the area. So it's multifaceted. It has, as news already has it, triggered many subsequent issues from it, including feuds and road blocking and unsolicited religious conflicts, etc., in pretty much the northwestern part of India.
Would Hindu beliefs lead to kind of the fatalistic acceptance of tragedies like this?
Yes, it would. It would. Because fate is a fundamental aspect of the Hindu faith, because it is a self-sustaining religion. And in a sense, God helps those who help themselves. But within the context of the four major ways of, I'm using my fingers, Todd, as you know, salvation, one of them is devotion. In the path of devotion, you are completely committed to God. And in that pursuit of attaining spirituality, be it on a pilgrimage, if God takes your life, so even through natural means, so be it. It is the will of God, and that soul at least has attained to that eternal freedom or peace, whatever they're expecting.
This tragedy occurred during the celebration of a religious festival, the news said, to a goddess of motherhood. What is this religious festival?
Oh, I do not know the exact name of it, though. Yeah.
Are these festivals, is it ordinary to have various festivals to various gods or goddesses in the Hindu belief system?
Yeah, they go on a lunar calendar, so these repeat annually every year, depending on the position of the moon. And I do not exactly know what goddess they were celebrating at this time. It involved 12,000 plus pilgrims, at least in this group, maybe 20,000. It happens annually, though, yeah.
So let's set the context within the Hindu belief system. There are multiple gods and goddesses. There's obviously this fatalistic notion. How would you describe Hinduism to someone who's has no familiarity whatsoever with this belief system?
It is so strange and fascinating and deep in philosophical thought and meditation. That itself is a deep silence, I know. Because for the practical Hindu, I'm talking about 800 plus million people all over the world, including the contingent, major contingent of which is actually in India. God is within oneself. So it sounds pretty postmodern and New Age-like, which it is. God is within oneself. God is then, unlike Christianity or any other religion that has a personal dimension of God, God is spirit, just spirit, but he manifests in various forms and shapes, including animals, trees, mountains, and human beings. So God is present everywhere, but he is also manifesting himself in many different forms and shapes. I insist on forms and shapes because there are animal gods, there are mountains and rocks, which are all considered to be God. On a very popular level, they say they have 330 million gods at Surara. But ultimately, philosophically, as I started out, God is spirit and God lives within each individual. The goal of Hinduism is to realize that. That's the big word. Completely. It is the lack of knowledge of that which causes you to be stuck in this, entangled in this fatalistic world.
Is there a god in Hinduism or a smaller circle of gods within the pantheon of Hinduism that are kind of the big ones, or do all gods stand on equal footing according to Hindu beliefs?
For practical purposes, I'll say two things. One is God is utilitarian because for a particular dimension of your earthly needs, you can go to a particular god. Like if you are short on wisdom, you go to the Saraswati, who is a female Hindu god for wisdom. If you are short on money and finances and all the attendant conveniences of life, you go to Lakshmi, which is another feminine aspect of God, which actually dishes out these kinds of material blessings to you. And if you are going to fall in love with a girl, then you have a special god to go to. So these are, in this sense, utilitarian. On the other hand, God is deep down within you. It is a sense that you need to keep in mind that you are indeed God, if you can believe that. But the lack of that sense within yourself and the understanding and the awareness of that sense within you, the lack of awareness of that sense within you causes you to stumble and to fall. And this is an ongoing saga that each individual has to go through and is going through. And in that sense, it is a tricky situation.
When the Hindu approaches the god or goddess, whatever it may be, what is the basis of the interaction? What's the basis of the exchange? If is it simply I ask and the god grants for no particular reason? Is it divine caprice? Is there some sort of exchange that takes place there?
There is what I will still use the word communication between God and the entity that asks of God a favor. And that's why I'm still going back to the devotional aspect of religion as such. And here this is so intriguing because when I go to communication, as I said before, if I know that I am God, who am I communicating with? So in my way of looking at it, it's a psychological closure to your struggles. You are talking to yourself. You are reconciling within yourself as to what the situation right now is and what the predicament I am in right now. So I converse within myself, in this case, again, using quoting scriptures and statements from sages who have gone before, reading them devotionally, and finding some kind of a meaning through those wisdom statements, and finally, okay, then saying that this is the will of God for me. That's what it is. That's the best construction I could put. From the experiential dimension of religion, that is why also they set up these temples and little icons all over the place, including, if you have the time, within a little household, they will have set up maybe 2 square feet of space in some corner, and they'll put an icon, an image, a picture, and go to that particular point and read their scriptures and pay homage to that particular deity, etc. It's so down to earth in that way. So going back to where I started out.
Well, let's take a break here, and I'm going to let you finish your report on the other side of the break. We're talking with Dr. Victor Raj. In light of the recent deadly stampede at a Hindu temple in India, we're trying to set it in its perspective, in its context of Hinduism. 1-877-623-MYIE or TalkBack at issuesetc.org. It's Wednesday, the 13th of August. We'll be right back. Take your phone calls and your email on Hinduism after the break. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Sponsors. The Issues Etc. 300.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Planned Parenthood seeks to undermine abstinence.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Planned Parenthood is in the midst of a nationwide campaign to convince state governors to reject federal funding for abstinence until marriage programs in state public schools. The pro-abortion organization argues that abstinence-only programs do not work and are a waste of taxpayer money. Critics of Planned Parenthood counter that abstinence programs do work and remind lawmakers that Planned Parenthood has a vested interest in sexually active adolescents. Despite such protests, Planned Parenthood has already convinced 14 states to reject federal funding for abstinence programs and is seeking to add to that number.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Have any questions on Hinduism? The story in the news is a tragedy, of course, but they're better understood, especially the aftermath is better understood in light of the religious atmosphere in India and elsewhere in the world. I mean, we're talking about almost 1 billion people on the world who are devotees of Hinduism. What kind of questions do you have? 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or email us here in the studio on this Wednesday, the 13th of August. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Victor Raj is our guest. Before the break, you were talking about how the average Hindu will even have a shrine of sorts in his home if he can afford it. You said this is a very down-to-earth religion, very not the ethereal thing that many of us from the West think it is from the outside looking in.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The point is you can also be philosophical, and as I would call it, Hinduism can be even atheistic. That's a strong word. Because fundamentally your goal is to discover the God that is within you. So it's a search for truth, if you will. On the other hand, for all practical purposes, just like any other religion, they need to have something that they can lean on or have an object to concentrate their spiritual thoughts and perhaps find some solace and comfort, assuming that the presence of God is in that object. It works that way as well. So it is all things to all people. And in the second vein of things, that's where you see the huge edifices, even in the United States. I'm talking from St. Louis, and 15 miles west of me is a $9 million Hindu temple building that was built like 12 years ago, which draws in about 1,000 families, according to the priest there. So there is that social identity symbol. But fundamentally, it is a mental experience. It's a self-sustaining, a self-wrought spiritual experience a person discovers for himself. To help that person aid in that endeavor, there are gods, incarnations of God, including animal forms and human forms, etc. And then there are objects that are stronger and bigger and larger than human beings. That's how the whole thing works here.
Would there be anything that would be a corollary to the Christian day of worship or the practices associated with the Christian worship? What are the practices, the worship practices of Hinduism?
There are no festivals as such which are comparable to Christianity, because it is not centered around one person, as we have Jesus Christ as the center of our religion. It is philosophical, although every day is a day of festival for the Hindu. You see the dichotomy that I'm trying to explain here. So the system is sociologically, theologically, philosophically, and naturally intertwined. So the positions of the stars and the moon and the change of seasons, all these play into this spirituality. Nature itself is God. The whole Mother Earth idea comes from this. Sun is a god. Moon is another god. The constellations all could be god and gods and so on. So the national festivals, there are so-called special dates, like, just like we have Christmas, only as an example, we have Christmas, and they have what is called Krishna Jayanti, which is the birthday of Krishna. And so there are some things like that, but all other festivals are basically celebrating events in life based on the lunar and the solar calendar. Is there a liturgy of worship in Hinduism? Yes, there is. But is there a congregational worship? Yes, there is. On the other hand, that is not the center of the Hindu faith. For example, the temple I mentioned near me, claiming more than 1,000 families in membership, draws at the most 100, I insist, 100 people to their sanctuary on a Saturday morning. Why Saturday? Because everybody's working all of the day, so it's a convenient day, so that's where they come. They have a kind of a public, I'm using that expression in for those who know what Christian worship is all about. So there's a public worship on a Saturday morning, say from 9 to 11 o'clock. On the other hand, from 5 a.m. to almost 5 p.m., any day of the week, you could come to this place and receive a blessing from the priest there. That is done on an individual basis. You can come as a family and receive the blessing from the priest. That's all you do. And you can also invite the priest over to your home and have a devotion with him for an hour or half hour or so. That's how it doesn't, as a structure, have a corporate worship as such. On the other hand, in the kind of festival situation that you just mentioned, which happens annually in all villages and all communities all over India, they just go for week long, at least a week long. Some days they could be 40 days long. People come and go on as they go on a pilgrimage like this. In this case, it drew more than 20,000 people. That would be not natural. Remember, I think like 6 months ago, we talked about Kumbh Mela.
Yeah.
That drew in millions of people to one place. And this particular one in Kumbh Mela last year was something that happened once every 20 years, so that was something very, very much more special than any other. Those are the big events that brings in groups and groups and groups of people. But for the daily average worship, it happens personally within the household. And for a special need, you go to the priest on a particular day, you go to the temple on a particular day. For a sense of congregational worship, probably on a Saturday you have an hour's worth.
Two quick final questions.
Yeah.
What is the afterlife, if there is such a thing, for the average Hindu?
The afterlife is ultimately the goal of being one with the eternity, which in Hinduism is the eternal spirit. And for all practical purposes, it is understood as it, not masculine, not feminine, not it is neuter, it is it. So it is abstract. The goal is for you to merge with that eternal spirit, so you no longer exist. But what happens is, though, you are then transported from this world of misery and sorrow and struggle and karma and all that. You enter, I can only use Christian expressions here, the eternal solace, that you will not have worry and sorrow and struggles and sickness anymore. That's it. What is that experience? We may need another hour to talk about that, if there is any. So the struggle here is to get to that point. On the other hand, it is not that easy. We're only very few people. We do not know how many have made it, because there is no one from out there who has come down to us to tell us what it is all about. So it's only a conjecture. We are assuming that we are getting there. The story is that, however, on the other hand, here, there is no certainty that we do get there. The problem is what we call karma, because you don't work enough. Your good deeds are not good enough for you to be freed from this world of sorrow and struggle. So you just come back to this place. There is no certainty of salvation as we Christians understand salvation to be. It is in limbo. It is hypothetically possible, but it is not assured that it's going to happen. Remember, back home I played what is called, when I was young, snake and ladder. I think you used to call this shoots and ladder.
Whatever. Yeah.
So you do the thing right, and then you shoot up 500 mark, 900 mark, and suddenly there is a snake that swallows you and brings you down to 0.0 or even lower. So that's the uncertainty with which the Hindus work in terms of their spiritual comfort and solace.
Dr. Victor Raj is Mission Professor of New Testament and Assistant Director of the Institute for Mission Studies at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He formerly served as President of the Concordia Theological Seminary in Nagercoil, India, and he's author of the book The Hindu Connection, Roots of the New Age. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Raj talked about being a Hindu and having no certainty of even the meager promises of the afterlife that they hope for, and no certainty that you're getting any closer, because no one who's gone there has come back to tell anyone about what's out there, what's left, or what's remaining. Big difference with Christianity, isn't there? Someone who actually does descend from the bliss of eternity with our divine creator, our God, not just in human form, but as a human being, to bear the sins and the suffering of the entire world in his body on the cross. He does come here not just to tell us what it's like, not just to say, I'll show you the way, or I'll show you how you can follow me back and be sure you're getting closer and closer to God and to eternal life. No. Many people think that's what Jesus came to do, but that's not true. Jesus didn't come to show us the way. He came to be the way. in a perfect life, his death and his resurrection to be the way of salvation for every sinner on earth, every person, man, woman, and child. There's a big difference there. When we come back from this break, Jennifer Roback-Morse joins us to talk about the hookup culture. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.